Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand and welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name is Mark Pacey from the Wairarapa Archive, and today we are reading Chapter 8 of Don Farmer's second book. Straight into it. Chapter 8, Bimbo, He Did It His Way. On a cold Martinborough night, there was nothing Bimbo Patton liked better than to soak in the bath, but never entirely on his own. He always made sure his transistor radio was alongside him, tuned to radio 2YA. Then he would whip the top off a quart bottle of beer to accompany him as he settled into the water. The bath was nothing flash anyway. Just enough hot water could be heated by the old coal range in the Grey Street house to allow one of the family to bath on any given day, unless the kids were prepared to take turns using the same water until it changed from reasonably hot to warm, to tepid, to cold. Bimbo's bath night was Sunday, a ritual he jealously guarded unless by some twist of fate he missed out, when he waited 7 days before he tried again. In normal circumstances, Bimbo's wife Val and the kids would ration out the other nights. The process was, however, once interrupted when the rotten floorboards beneath the old bath gave up the ghost. Part of the floor underneath the bath collapsed, tilting the bath and tipping Val unceremoniously sideways. Bimbo made a mental note to fix it, and he had to do something about the toilet door too. The door kept jamming, refusing to close properly, so Bimbo had taken it off its hinges. That was now some time ago. "We will have to get around to fixing it and putting it back," he mused, but he never did. The bathing arrangements might not have been ideal, but at least it was a step up from the family's scrub-a-tub experiences when they first arrived in Martinborough. Their home in the first days had been a garage in Daniel Street. The bath for that makeshift home stood in splendid isolation outside in the paddock and had to be filled using water boiled in the garage in a copper pot. Bimbo, who was at that time known by his proper name, Len, was yet to attain the nickname. It didn't feel comfortable with the family having to wash in a paddock with no privacy at all. He rustled up a few carcasses and slapped up a makeshift shed around the bath. Okay, it was hardly state-of-the-art, but it did the trick as far as the man of the house was concerned. In those days, the family had consisted of Mum, Dad and 4 kids. 2 more kids would be added later, and it was not unusual for the good people of Martinborough, who must have wondered what had arrived in their midst, to see Father Patton getting around town on a pushbike with all 4 kids squeezed onto the bar of the bike. They were soon to realise that the head of the Patton household was not your run-of-the-mill man. Len Patton had been born in Wellington. His father had died when he was very young, and Len developed his footloose and fancy-free attitude to life partly through moving around the country with his mum. He wasn't one to dwell on becoming educated in an academic sense and left school at 12. His education was to come through a lifetime of practical experience, as many of them hair-raising and cavalier. As a young man, he had a go at just about everything, some jobs more sanitary than others. Young Len worked on farms, had a go at carpentry, was a high-rise window cleaner and a night cart worker. He even joined the Air Force. He worked as a driver for Akitio County Council and later with Val and a young family moved to Upper Hutt to become a bus driver for the New Zealand Road Services. His introduction to Martinborough was just around the corner and was, in itself, a typical Len Patton decision, probably made on the spur of the moment and with little or no homework put in before deciding to up stakes and away. He had expected he could keep working as a road services bus driver working out of Martinborough, but having relocated to the town, found both bus driver jobs were taken. Len was left high and dry, but totally untroubled. He landed a job with Wairarapa Electric Power Board as a linesman, and was then that Len Patton got his everlasting nickname Bimbo. Singer Jim Reeves had made famous the song of a little boy, Bimbo, who delighted all that saw him, and he ambled about eating candy and catching the eye of the girls. Bimbo, bimp. Try and sing this. I won't sing it, actually. I'll just speak it. Bimbo, bimbo. Where you gonna go-eo? Bimbo, bimbo, what you gonna do-eo? Bimbo, bimbo, does your mummy know that you're going down the road to see a little girlie-o? Len Patton, like many others, loved the catchy tune and whistled and sang it so often his workmates dubbed him Bimbo. Bimbo Patton got what he'd really wanted when a vacancy eventually arose for Road Services bus driver in town, taking over from Tom Dillon. Back behind the wheel, Bimbo's primary job was the route from Martinborough to Featherstone, making several return trips a day. He carted mail back and forth between the two towns, picked up newspapers from Featherstone Railway Station, taking them to Martinborough, and likewise delivered others to the station from Martinborough. Soon he was just as well known in Featherstone as he was in Martinborough for his zanny sense of humour, his devil-may-care attitudes about just about everything, and a parcel of other eccentricities. With either his pipe or his roll-your-own-cigarette dangling from his mouth, Bimbo would arrive at Featherstone mailroom each day, heard before he was seen, and almost without fail, with a joke or a tale to tell. Part of his job was ferrying Martinborough school children, and from St. Teresa's School in Featherstone. Kids would be kids, and they could get pretty boisterous on board the bus on the homeward trip. Bimbo was tolerant, to a point. When the hubbub became a racket, he would pull the bus to the side of the road and issue a warning. If that went unheeded, Bimbo had no compunction stopping the bus again, when it was within walking distance of the Martinborough township, and order the kids to disembark and walk the rest of the way. If that included his own children, then so be it. Bimbo was not about to play favourites. He took many sports groups and other parties away on bus trips, clocking up one would probably have preferred to forget. It was a journey through the Akatarawas, which had a reputation of being a drive not recommended for the faint-hearted, and knowing that high-spirited party day-loving trippers needed a comfort stop from time to time, Bimbo pulled over and stopped. Everyone vacated the bus, Bimbo included, only to watch in horror as the crumbling road shoulder gave way. The bus toppled over the bank, rolling several times. The hard-case bus driver once got the laugh of a woman who had journeyed with him to Martinborough. Bimbo had tucked away one or two beers, and the woman had obviously caught a whiff of this. She got off in Martinborough rather indignant and remarked that the bus driver was the worst ride of her life. She would telephone a taxi from the bus depot and take her the rest of the way to her destination. Obviously, she knew little of Bimbo, who had spent so many nights... That's not right. Let's do that again. Who had so many irons in the fire, he really should have been a blacksmith. The taxi was duly called, and lo and behold, it arrived with none other than Bimbo Patton, having had a change of clothes and wearing a different hat behind the wheel. Bimbo, still a little worse for wear, smiled, "Where to, ma'am?" he said with a broad grin. Running a taxi service was just one of the many strings to Bimbo's money-making bow. He loved the RT installed in his cab, with Val at the other end arranging fares. Bimbo would call in, base one to base two, and loved the lingo like copy that and roger. It was big business, Martinborough style, even though only he and his wife were involved. Val and the kids knew that Bimbo driving a taxi had its pitfalls. In the days when hiring a taxi long distance was not too expensive, especially if more than one person was picking up the tab, Bimbo would occasionally get a call to deliver crates of beer to the coast. This would signal a beach party was about to get underway, and off Bimbo would go. The rest of the day would pass, and the night, before Bimbo and his cab reappeared with the dawning of the new day. He had not only delivered the booze, but had stayed on to help dispose of it. Either in peace, Bimbo had a milk truck, and parties got in the way of that business too. Milk had to be in people's mailboxes before the morning light, but Bimbo sometimes missed that requirement. He would come across an all-night party. Oops, I'm going to do that again because that sounds weird because I put a strange space in there. He would come across an all-night party and join in the with the partygoers, leaving his nearly full milk truck at the curbside. Bimbo's boundless energy and pursuit of money, coupled with his Heath Robinson style of inventive mind, led him into many other ventures. He swept chimneys and established a bottle-o and scrap metal business, buying second-hand washers to heat water to cleanse the inside of beer bottles and flagons. The bottles were on sale to ABC in Carterton, and the clean flagons returned to pubs at a profit. Right, now I made a mental note that that's where my pause bit was going to be, because I knew, being a bottle collector, I would remember the bottle bit. So we're going to play one piece of music, then we'll come back to it. This is from a Swedish band called Ghost, who like to sing songs about horror-themed things. This is Danse Macabre. Danse Macabre by Ghost. Really, really good band if you want to check them out. Just be aware some of their videos get a bit strange. Right, we were talking about bottles, weren't we? And here we go. Bimbo toyed around with the washer, having built yet another shed from carcasses to accommodate it, and got it working nicely, heating the water needed. everything went honky-dory until Bimbo experimented just a little too far one day. Running on petrol, the washer backfired with a loud bang and a huge shudder, sending super hot water all over Bimbo's face, causing superficial burns. When a building in Martinborough Square that had been used as a grocery store became vacant, Bimbo jumped at the opportunity to set up shop as a second-hand bric-a-brac business. In the shop, Bimbo set about the rules of trade. He had a gigantic cartoon poster of a pig facing away from the camera, its huge backside dominating the poster, which from the top read, "We give credit," and then displayed across the pig's bottom and finished with, "We do." Bimbo was a convincing salesman and had the shop for the best part of 10 years, although he didn't make the millions that he dreamed of. He bought his own brand of salesmanship to the business, meaning if you believed what he told you and paid for the privilege, then all's well and good. Should you trap him, he just about amended the rules. One young man who spied what seemed to be a pretty good find was taking his time, checking over early editions of the Arabian Nights on sale at a fair price. Not bargain basement, but fair. They were in pride and place in the shop with a card reading, "The Complete Works, The Arabian Nights." Bimbo sauntered over, bringing with him his sales pitch. "That's a bloody steal. I could ask a lot more for them. The Complete Works and in great condition for their age," he said. The would-be buyer was taking a hard look. "But Bimbo, they aren't complete. There's a full volume missing." Genuinely taken aback, Bimbo took a look. There were volumes 1, 2, and 4. No volume 3. Without so much as a blink of an eye, Bimbo reached for his pen. He took the card and squeezed in an extra word. The card now read, "The Almost Complete Works, The Arabian Nights." A sale was not made, and Bimbo was prepared to wait until a person wanting to buy volumes of The Almost Complete Arabian Nights entered the shop. On some days in late afternoon, when he had finished his bus runs and had successfully juggled whatever other ventures he had on the boil, Bimbo would lock up the shop and closet himself away with his thoughts and a bottle, maybe two, of beer. There was an old fireplace in the shop, which he had never fired up, and one chilly evening Bimbo decided, as he sat there thinking and drinking, that he could rustle up enough wood to light up and warm his toes. Little did he realise the fireplace was intact, but the old chimney had been sealed off at the roof line, an exterior part of the chimney having been demolished way back in 1947. Bimbo got the fire cracking okay, but within minutes, smoke that had nowhere else to go had filled the roof cavity and was seeping through every nook and cranny in the shop and billowing out from under the exterior doors. The man, who usually had an answer for everything, had met his match this time. Bimbo, and probably Arthur's passers-by, summoned the fire brigade, who managed to curb the problem with no real harm done. Yet another story was added to the exploits of the colourful bus driver, who had the ability to reduce an entire town to stitches of laughter. Sadly, Val died of an aneurysm in 1978 at just 54 years of age, leaving behind her husband and their son David and 6 daughters, Catherine, Naomi, Brenda, Trish, Pauline and Mark. Bimbo was a man who had a track record of being able to bounce back, and he was never meant to be alone in life. Soon he had teamed up with an old flame, Rhonda, and the couple were married. Bimbo was on the horns of a dilemma. He loved Martinborough, but had the feeling the town had outgrown him. So after 21 years in Martinborough, he took a look around as much as did General Douglas MacArthur in World War II and declared, "I will return," before packing up his belongings with Rhonda and shifting to Rangiwahia. The bizarre list of jobs Bimbo had taken over his lifetime were added to. He was employed as a sexton and dug graves by hand in his new hometown, and also in Upiti and Kimbolton. Rhonda died in 1988, and Bimbo was once again on his own. But not for long. He saw an advertisement in a newspaper that he couldn't resist answering. A woman living in Fielding was seeking a boarder who had to be a handyman. With his ability to take on just about everything, Bimbo bolted and joined Mary, a woman the best part of 20 years older than he was, and soon became a bit more than just a flatmate. Mary had a few bob and treated Bimbo to all sorts of luxuries, and he would never have dreamed of, including overseas trips to seaside paradises like Bali and Norfolk Island. Bimbo and Mary moved from Fielding to Marton. Bimbo bought an old ambulance that he was going to convert to a motorhome, but in typical fashion, he never got round to it. Instead, he decided to take Mary on a road trip to Martinborough and catch up with old mates. They arrived in town in a brightly coloured CF Bedford van, complete with mag wheels and bedding in the back. Bimbo proudly told his old mates the vehicle was their passion wagon. It was the same vehicle that had left a group of well-intentioned teenagers with a lifelong memory. Bimbo and Mary had broken down on the roadside, and the young men had decided to come and rescue, thinking the vehicle was in keeping with people their own age. They parked their car behind the stranded Bedford and wandered up to discover the occupants of the flashy, souped-up van were none other than Ma and Pa Kettle. For all that, Bimbo was not really suited to fast and powerful cars. Once having bought a high-powered Subaru, he had great difficulty in controlling the pressure he exerted on the accelerator. In other words, he had a lead foot and was booked time and time again for speeding. Eventually, with a stack of unpaid tickets to deal with, Bimbo sold the car to pay the fines. Mary was getting on in years and was in failing health. She had moved to a rest home in Whanganui. Once again, Bimbo seemed to prove when it came to women, it was like a moth to a flame. They seemed to see something special in the hard case character with multiple eccentricities. Soon, Bimbo had a new female pal, and he decided to take her to the rest home to visit Mary. It was not a decision that had a happy ending. Mary, far from pleased and unbelieving of his cheek, ended up pouring her cup of tea all over him. When Mary died, Bimbo moved to Whanganui, where he lived with his cat, Sam, and dog, Jack. Bimbo managed to renew his license, but had to prove that being 80, he still had driving ability. At first, he failed on technicalities, but later succeeded. The traffic officer chastised Bimbo for not using his rear vision mirror, to which Bimbo came back with a stinging reply, "I like to look where I am going, not where I have been." In Whanganui, he unintentionally pulled a swifty on an insurance company. Bimbo discovered someone had stolen his car and duly reported the theft to police and his insurers. Weeks passed and the car remained unsighted. The insurer paid Bimbo out, and it wasn't until much later the car was found. It had been tucked away in a car park for weeks, just where Bimbo had left it. It was undamaged and his checkbook was still in the glove box. Eventually, Father Time beckoned to Bimbo, and the old trooper found he couldn't live life any longer at the pace he always had, or with the same self-contained assurance that had been his hallmark. He pulled up stakes once again and moved to Hamilton to live with his daughter Naomi and her husband Ross. Aging he may have been, but there remained in the octogenarian a stubborn flame of independence combined with a mischievous cunning. His daughter and son-in-law spent much of their time trying to track Bimbo down. Usually his mobility scooter parked outside a pub gave the game away, and Bimbo could be found at the bar. When it became obvious Bimbo needed 24-hour care, he was signed to a rest home, but pined to come home to Martinborough. Arrangements were made to bring him back where he wanted to be, but the day before he was due to leave Waikato, Bimbo took a serious turn for the worse and was told his life was quickly ebbing away. His flight tickets south were cancelled. But the old bus driver had one more trick up his sleeve. Against all odds, he rallied, and only 6 hours after being given the diagnosis that he was about to meet his maker, old Bimbo began racing up and down the corridors of Waikato Hospital with his Zimmer frame. Flights were rebooked for him, but sadly it was not to be. Bimbo died in the hospital on September 2nd, 2009. He did, though, get his wish. His body was brought back to Martinborough for his funeral service and burial. Right, there you go, that's that one. So that's eight. I think we've got, let's count it, four chapters left. It's about 10. That's about, we may have to split one of these. Chapter 10 is 22 pages. Oh, no, we can do that, I think. Yeah, we'll just play a shorter piece of music. We'll go over time. That's fine. So we've got 1 month, basically, left of Don's book, and then we'll, I should have accumulated enough more of my stories that we can come back to those. All right, well, have a brilliant week. Look after yourselves. Hopefully the weather is going to be decent, but who knows? And we will catch up with you next Monday. Thanks for listening.